I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Tracy Stewart, and Tracy has written a lovely book, Do Unto Animals, A Friendly Guide to How Animals Live and How We Can Make Their Lives Better. She's a passionate animal advocate and really has been so for her whole life. She's a former veterinary technician, founder of the website Mooma, which provides parents and children with fun, easy, and effective ways to contribute to nonprofits. And she now has embarked on a whole new project. She says that last year it became clear her family includes John Stewart, you probably know this, was happiest when they had the most opportunities for animal encounters. So they moved from the city to rural New Jersey, and the backyard serves as a makeshift wildlife rehabilitation center, their home as a foster and permanent rescue for animals. They are in the process of being able to provide sanctuary to rescued farm animals. And she writes about animals in all, you know, about dogs and cats and squirrels and cows. She really loves cows and sheep and spiders and squirrels and rabbits and you name it. And we're delighted to have Tracy with us this hour of the program and to welcome phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that is at K Dunn Show. Hi, Tracy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Well, watch out for us. You got two dog lovers on the air. We could take up the whole hour talking about dogs. We'll go beyond them, but I know you love them.
I do love them. You know, I was listening to your description of me, and the word hoarder kept coming into my mind.
But you just hoard animals, right? You don't hoard anything else.
Just animals.
Everything else is in order. Mm-hmm. Tell us, you know, it's interesting that you looked at early pictures of yourself, probably in putting together this book, and you found that, you know, there was your mom who had, what, a bird in her hand and,
yes.
and or on the top of her head and a rabbit or something
rabbit.
In her arms. It was a part of your family early on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate in that my whole family are very intense animal lovers, and so that has always been a part of my life, and I'm grateful for that. And we did always have, there was always something alive in our house, and this day, not as many as there are today. But this morning I was actually having breakfast, and a friend of mine emailed me to say they needed to find a home for a parrot. And I read it out loud, and my son was sitting across from me, and he said, "No, Mommy."
Oh, and then maybe when your son left, you could go and get the parrot, huh?
Well, I am considering it.
I'll bet you are. So, you know, it's interesting. We all have dogs in our lives, I think, or animals that serve this really important purpose. And I love this description of one day you found your doggy soulmate in a chocolate brown gaze. You were living in San Francisco, and literally that dog changed your life, Tracy.
He really did. Yeah, I had many jobs my whole life. One of my best jobs ever was that I was a candy salesperson. So I would drive up and down the coast of California. And every time I would see an animal shelter, I would feel compelled to stop. And so I did. And I felt as though I had to go up and greet every animal there and have them be seen. And it became really problematic for me. And then I did start to realize why I was doing that. And I think, you know, I write about it in the book that I felt as though I needed all of them to see that they had been seen and that their goodness had been recognized. I think when I was growing up and I was young, my parents had a very tumultuous relationship. And so I felt like I was a good kid, but I think there was so much craziness going on that I didn't think that that got seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I did feel compelled to have that be seen in those animals. And I think I still have that today. But once I realized why I was doing it, because it did become really depressing for me to do this all the time, you know, I stopped, but I would do it more on a monthly rather than, you know, every day kind of situation. And so I did come across this dog, Enzo, and at the time I was in a bad relationship. I was living in San Francisco. And once I adopted this dog, I realized I was in a bad relationship and I needed to get out. And the guy that I was dating even recognized, he said he knew the minute I adopted the dog, I'd be out soon. And it is the case. So, you know, when I came back, when I moved to New York is when I met my husband. And so I do feel like that was a really big boon for me that I found this dog and that he motivated me to take better care of myself.
Yeah, and little did you know what husband was around the corner.
Oh, right? I mean, if I had known, I would have been out the door long ago.
But then maybe you wouldn't have met. You never really know, right?
That's right.
Yeah. It's interesting that he said to you, John said to you, that he really thought, because you've been doing other kinds of work, design work and designing all kinds of things, but that this love of animals, you weren't very good in math. I get that fully. And John said, you really need, I think this is amazing he said this, work that will make you cry.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
I have to say, he is such a perceptive person, and he's such a compassionate person, and he really did, like, he really was paying attention to me and did see that I had a lot of passion, and yet I never felt that way about work or what I was doing. And so when we would start to get into these conversations about what I wanted to really do, I would say, you know, he would say, when you were young, what did you always want to do? And I would say, I wanted to be a veterinarian. Well, why didn't you do that? And I had created a lot of rationalizations about why I didn't want to do that. And the main one was that I felt as though I was a very empathetic person and that might actually crush me, that I wouldn't be able to compartmentalize the pain or the suffering that I would see. And he was the one that told me he thought that I actually needed to be around that I needed to cry. And he was absolutely right. That was the beginning of me actually enjoying my work and feeling as though I had finally found my path.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about one of those days. Let's go to cows. I thought I'd start with cows, but after what you said, I was really struck by, obviously, the birth of our children are the most memorable of our lives, but I think you said the second most memorable was with a cow. It was a great name of the cow, too.
Miss Eyebrows.
Oh, Miss Eyebrows. I love it. And you really remember that day.
I really remember that day. Once I went back to school for veterinary technology, one of the classes that you had to take was large animal. And so we got to spend a week up at a farm up in northern New York. And it was just a beautiful experience for all of us. And when we went up there, though, there was a cow that was downed. It couldn't get back up. And our teacher took the farmer aside and said, I don't know if she's going to get back up. I have a friend down the road. He could come and get her, and we can render her for meat, and I can get you a good price on her. So he said this in front of all the students who, were shocked and upset. And to the farmer's credit, he said, no, these girls are born on my land, and they die on my land, and we're going to get her up. So he had known a friend who had taken his tractor and lifted a cow up and put the cow in a pond and massaged the legs so that the cow could get back up. Because what happens is with the size of a cow, they're so large that if they do go down, their circulation is getting cut off. Mm-hmm. And so even when they roll over, it's a kind of a never-ending battle to get back up on their feet to get that blood going again. So we ended up putting her in a tractor and putting her in a pond, and our teacher turned around and said, who wants to get in? And I, without even stopping, was in, massaging her legs, and she did get up, and she gave birth to a calf, and because it was my birthday on that day, I got to help assist in that. But when the birth was done, we all looked up, and before the cow had gone into labor, all of the other cows were out across the pasture, and when we looked up, they had all come, and they were all lined up to see who was born. And I honestly, from that day, I've never eaten a burger since. It was something.
And you say that they are deeply, and you just told me why, deeply emotional animals.
Yes, and very. I don't think people realize, for cows especially, they're very maternal. And they carry their babies for as long as we do. They're very attached. And so, in modern farming practices, what ends up happening is those babies get taken away right away so as not to waste the milk for human consumption. And that is something that's incredibly upsetting for cows, for any animal.
And they arrange to babysit for each other.
I
didn't know that.
Yes. So if one will go out and eat, and then the other girls will watch the children. He goes and gets hers and then comes back. It's so beautiful. And, I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time up at Farm Sanctuary, up in Watkins Glen. And you see these things happening all the time. And it really is, it's beautiful, and it really does inspire you to do better.
So are you going to have cows at your sanctuary?
Yes, I really am excited. I really, really, really love cows. And so initially, I was afraid we wouldn't have enough land, but we think we've managed to get some more land, and so we're going to be able to have some cows, and I'm really excited about that.
Mm. And it's interesting, you write that, I guess it was just fairly recently, you were city people, and you decided that your family really was doing best when you had interaction with animals, mm-hmm. and it made you move, right, out
yeah,
of the city.
It did. So we had gone on a vacation that was very animal-filled. We were outside all the time. And when we came back, I was sitting at the kitchen table with John, and I said, you know, it's sad because it seems like the times when we're most happy are when we're around animals and when we're outside. And because we live in the city, those moments don't happen
right.
all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, he said, well, you know, those moments could happen more if we didn't live in the city. And I was actually the one who didn't want to leave the city. He did.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, and he knew, you know, our plans for retirement was always that we would do something like this, that we would have a sanctuary, but this was thought to be years down the road. So I think he played me, and he said, you know, what if what you think you're going to be missing by taking the kids out of their school now, they'll gain something in having this sanctuary be a part of their lives at a younger age. And so that was it. So we came down and we moved to more of a rural New Jersey, and it's the best thing we ever did.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And your children share your love of animals. I love the story, Tracy, of you go to shelters. You still can't help yourself, and I guess your children can't either.
They can't either.
You know, but they bring stories to read to guinea pigs.
Yes.
Oh.
And that happened because my daughter initially had trouble reading. She was really uncomfortable reading in front of her classmates. So she didn't want to get things wrong, and so that was really stopping her. So we came up with the idea that, you know, we were already volunteering at a local shelter, so we came up with the idea that she could go in and she could read to the cats. And so she started to do that, and she got really excited about it, and she loved it. And then we realized, too, when we were away, if we were going to be near an animal shelter, that she could still do that. So she did one day. We were on vacation, and she went into a shelter with a tale of two guinea pigs. And she read to the guinea pigs, and they loved it, and she loved it. But I think sometimes with people, they think they're waiting for a program to be developed for their child as an entryway into something that they can do. But especially animal shelters, they're so understaffed that they're really just waiting for you to come up with a great idea. And if you have the energy and the time to put in, they're usually pretty open to great ideas.
Yeah. One of the things, I like a lot of things about your book, but I love this, because whoever thinks of this, 5 ways to make a dog happy, and how to make a cat happy, and how to make a horse happy, and a cow happy. We don't normally think in those terms, do we?
No. I mean, I do think we think about them with our dog, but less so, and with our cats, certainly less so with other animals. But I think for me, I always find if I really sit and think about it, I could be doing better for all of them. And I do think it helps to put ourselves in their shoes and think about what actually would they like, what kinds of things do we notice in them that they love the most, and bringing more of that into their lives. You know, I've adopted a lot of animals, and I've had a lot of animals, and so there's been different situations that I've had to deal with, and because of that, I've had the good fortune of dealing with animal behaviorists. So with that came a lot of really great ideas for things to do for our animals to give them enrichment. You know, and I think in the book we talk about cats a lot, and, you know, their love of hunting and how we can create that in our homes and make things a lot more fun for them. Which ends up being something that the whole family can work on together.
Well, you're going to have to tell the cat story because it's very, very funny, and it shows how much you really your now husband liked you and you liked him, but of all the animals, you do have a hard time with cats because of allergies.
Yes. So when I started dating John, I was very upset to find out that he lived with a cat. You know, I loved it because it was actually a cat that had come from, you know, a split. He had broken up with a girlfriend and he had gotten the cat, so I thought that said volumes about
it. Right.
But I really was, you know, afraid. And he does love animals. And there was, you know, an irrational part of me that thought if the cat didn't love me, that he would actually take that as a sign.
I got it. Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So there was one night where he had made me dinner. And he had gotten a phone call. And at the time, this was in the beginning of his career. And it was from the David Letterman show. So at that time, I thought, oh, my gosh, this could be like a career-altering phone
right.
call. I need to be quiet. I ran into the bathroom. and to freshen up, and little Stanley was in there. And so I thought, this was my chance. I'm going to really show him what a wonderful person I am. I bent down, and he literally jumped onto my face with all four claws.
Oh.
And I couldn't, you know, John was on the phone, and I felt as though I couldn't scream.
Oh.
So I would take one paw off, only to have another one lodge deeper into my throat. So by the time I came out, I was cut. You know, I had to stay in the bathroom for a long time and put cold compresses on.
And oh, Tracy.
But we did grow to love each other very much, me and Stanley.
Oh, and you had to come to the apartment having taken antihistamines.
Yes.
And the albuterol is right next to you. And you wanted that relationship to work. There
it
is no doubt about it.
Sexy time.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I haven't tried, I love these ideas of, you know, and how to make, I'm really a dog person. I'd love to have lots and lots of dogs, and I'm on my way to doing it. I know, and I'm going to do it pretty soon because we made a move, too, so I can get more dogs.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But this idea, I've never done this with my dog. It's a simple thing. When you have a lot of these in the book for all kinds of animals, we do hide and seek with the dog we have now, but hide and seek with treats. What a good idea. How do you do that? I'm going to do it tonight.
Yes. Well, I mean, I actually have to say that's probably my dog's favorite game. But we do have four dogs, so when we play that, we actually put the other three out in the backyard to really give the one dog his time. And so we will just hide things around the house. And, you know, they have such powerful noses, and they really can smell things. And if you think about when they're out back, that's the kind of thing that they love to do, too. So, like, on a rainy day, when they're stuck inside all day, we'll tend to do that too, and we take little Kongs and we stuff little treats in there, and then we put them around the house, and they're really excited to go find that, and that's a simple thing to do.
Yeah, I'll try that definitely tonight. We're going to welcome phone calls, and I hope some of you have had a chance to read Tracy's book. It really is lovely. It's Do Unto Animals is the title, A Friendly Guide to How Animals Live and How We Can Make Their Lives Better. The blurb about her on the back of the book says she's a passionate animal advocate and a former veterinary technician. I love that story about Miss Eyebrows. Also the founder of the website Mooma, which provides parents and children with lots of ways to contribute to all kinds of nonprofits. She lives now in a country part of New Jersey with her husband, who is John Stewart. They have two children. They probably have more than this now. Four dogs, two pigs, one hamster, three rabbits, two guinea pigs, one parrot, and two fish. And they are all rescues, she said, except for the kids. And they are in the process of making their place a sanctuary as well. It will be a farm sanctuary. And so she will have a chance to have cows and horses and everything else. So join us if you'd like, huh? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, where we love to read your comments, is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Stewart is with us, and we're talking about dogs and cats and humor and squirrels and cows and sheep we have yet to talk about, and horses, and our connection to the animal world, how we can make it richer. She has lots of information about animals, about fostering animals and rescuing animals, and the importance of animals in her life and her family's life. So that's what we're talking about. It's fun. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we start our calls with Gail in Fish Creek. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. This is great. I'm so happy for both of them, that this is happening for them in this time in their life and everything. But I'm knowing that sensing with the animals, I do that professionally, and I always used to do it when I was a kid. And when she was mentioning cows, they have conversations with each other. And when I'm driving around and there's a herd of them out in the pasture, I can hear them, their conversations, and they play games, and it's just marvelous how the way they have their own world, and all animals have that connection. And just feeling that, I just have that sense about their place, that it's just such a beautiful place to, and it's just going to expand and be wonderful. Hmm. And my question is, as they do that, are they is going to turn into a place where others will be able to contribute in some way to help the cause that she has, that she's so passionate and compassionate about?
Yes, absolutely. And actually what happened was, originally, John and I were going to do this on our own, and we were going to do it in a small way. So I think what our original plan was to think that we would be a great adoptive home. And so I had gone up to Farm Sanctuary, which is up in Watkins Glen, and I had spent a lot of time up there and really saw what they were doing and the impact that it was having, and thought that I would love to expand what they were doing to a larger population. So where we were located is very dense, and the problem is sometimes in those denser areas it's hard to be able to run a sanctuary because it is, it requires a lot and it requires funding. And so I started to fantasize, that in some way we could marry Farm Sanctuary, and I could take their organization and all that they had done and be able to infuse it with what we could offer in our area. And so, my friends always tease me and say, they reference the book The Secret and say that they think that I have it, because I do have a way of, if I just say something out loud enough, it tends to happen. And so I just kept saying it. I kept saying it would be so great if we could join forces. And eventually they said, you know what, I think you're right. Let's do that. So the great thing is that when we open up the sanctuary, the infrastructure will come from Farm Sanctuary. And then the educational component will also come from them. Plus, I have a lot of ideas I'd like to incorporate in there. Also, John is very interested in helping veterans, so we'd like to be able to incorporate that population as well. And we want this place to be something where the community feels a part of it. And that we're giving to the community, and the community has a chance to do things on the property as well. So it'll be a very public place.
And when's it going to be open?
We're hoping for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's very hard to say because we really do want to do it right. And I think when you do have that many animals and you're giving them individualized care, you really do. You can't just throw up a barn that isn't, properly fitted for that kind of operation.
Oh, I hope in a couple of years we'll see a documentary, Tracy. It would be so lovely to see that.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to see myself up on the big screen.
Oh, sure. Well, you don't have to have yourself there, but the cows and the pigs, and they can all be there.
That would be nice.
Could be in the background.
I could hide behind them.
Right. Thanks very much, Gayla, for your call. Let's go to Todd in Madison. Hi, Todd.
Hello.
Hi, Todd.
Tracy earlier was talking about the hide the treat game. And we've got a scary smart chocolate lab. And we have to figure out great games to play with him. And that's one game that he really loves. I'll make him sit in another room. I'll go into another room and hide one of his treats someplace, right? But the only thing is, it didn't take him long. What he figured out, he just put his nose on the floor and figured out where I walked. So now I have to walk to all different places, like four or five places, and put it under there, take it out, put it under there, take it out. And every time he goes to a place and looks at it, and it's not there, he gives me a look. Like, I know you were there. And then he keeps walking. So not only was I playing a game with him, but he's playing a game with me, too. It's kind of fun.
I love that you didn't get defeated. You just kept figuring it out.
Right. He's a smart doggy, huh?
Yeah, very smart. Scary. And one time, we were taking care of another dog, and his name is Boone. He goes out for walks all the time, right? And it was time for a walk. He goes and gets his leash, right? And since we were taking care of that dog, he went and got his leash. He also went and got the other dog's leash and brought it back to us on his own.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Kind of nice dog, but sometimes it's kind of scary how smart they are.
Yeah. Well, that's a great story. Thank you so much.
I also think, if we sit some time and we take time to notice, there really are such incredible things that they're doing. And I do think they're watching us all the time. They're paying such close attention, and they really do know us so well. And when we do that back, I think we learn a lot more than we realize. We're able to see a lot more is going on than we might give them credit for.
Jan in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Oh, I'm so excited. First, I just want to tell you quick, I have some animal confusion. I have a dog who used the cat litter box and a cat that retrieves. So I have, my animals are a little mixed up. But what I really want to ask about, John had this piece about pigs on his show, and I've had nightmares ever since. I'm wondering, are you two doing anything legislatively to try and stop those awful, awful places where they're so cruel to pigs? I know that now a lot of big people, big organizations are like going toward cage-free eggs and things. So some chicken people are coming around. But how about pig people?
Well, you know, a good two organizations are doing a lot with that, besides Farm Sanctuary. Farm Sanctuary is also. But Animal League Defense Fund is a great organization that is made up of lawyers, and they're working very hard on that. Also, the Humane Society does a lot of work in that regard. And when that, you know, I don't know if you remember with Chris Christie, some legislation was coming up in New Jersey, and he was going to veto the law. My husband was waiting and waiting for something to happen before he said something, you know, and I was on him to just go out and say something about it, and he said, you know, I will know when the time is right, and I will say something, and he did, and it did have impact, not in that Chris Christie did anything differently, but it got a lot of attention, and especially in New Jersey got a lot of attention, because I don't think a lot of people realize that that was even going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's actually a new thing for people to even understand that that's what's happening in these large-scale farms.
Yeah. In your chapter on the pig, the brainiac of the farm, and you mention, oh, didn't you love Wilbur, the first pig you ever fell in love with? Those, we all, many of us share that memory of loving pigs because of Wilbur.
And I think a lot of us don't have an opportunity to meet these animals.
Right.
And that's how we're able to disconnect in the way that we do, and in the way that I have done. But we have two pigs now on our farm, Anna and Maybell, that we adopted from Farm Sanctuary. And they're such loving girls, and everybody really loves to come and play with them. And they really do play like dogs, and I think that people are really surprised to see that. And it does have impact. And so, that's just been our first taste of having these animals be ambassadors, and I can already see how much is changing minds. So it's so exciting to think that we're going to be able to do this on a larger scale.
Oh, I imagine. And they like their chew toys, which I didn't know, to be perfectly clean.
Yeah, they're very clean. You know, we have two pot bellies as well, and they are litter box trained because they really do like to be clean. So the reason that you always think of a pig in mud is because they can't sweat, and so they use the mud to cool themselves down. Also, because the industry has kind of bred them to be white and pale, they get sunburned very easily. So they figured out that if they cover themselves with mud, they won't be so sore during the day or on a summer day.
Oh, so how many animals do you have now, Tracy?
Are you calling me a hoarder?
No, a lover of animals. I bet you've added to my intro of how many you had.
Okay, so I have three horses now. I have four pigs, four dogs, three rabbits, two guinea pigs, a hamster, two fish, and a parrot. And maybe later today I'll have two parrots.
Yeah, it sounds like it might. Thanks very much for the call, Jan. Zach is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Kathleen. Just wanted to ask what you guys think it might be like for animals a few hundred years from now. Like, will it be illegal, do you think, maybe to even eat cows or pigs? Or, you know, will our descendants look at us like we look at some of our slaveholding ancestors? I think it might change a lot over the next coming century, so kind of curious what you guys think.
Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I really have hope for that, and I can see it even just more recently, it's very easy to talk to people now in a way that it wasn't. You know, years ago when I was a vegetarian, I saw a lot more resistance to those conversations than I even see today, having those conversations and talking about eating a vegan diet. I think because people are learning about health reasons for making a change as well. I think sometimes that information that you don't want to let in, that those stories that you don't want to see, is often, it has to do with wanting to protect yourself, you know, being caught up in your traditions and your habits, your culture. And I think the more things get knocked down that remove those barriers, like if we're starting to learn that it's maybe not healthy to eat meat or to drink these dairy products, that some of the resistance to hearing the stories happens. And I always think, you know, when I became vegan, I said it was almost as if I had been living my life on hallucinogenic drugs, and all of a sudden I was sober and I was looking around going, oh my God!
Really?
Does everybody see what's happening here? How does no one see this? But I do think more people are going to come to that realization and see that. And when that does happen, it's a really wonderful, beautiful thing. It's not a disturbing thing or a limiting thing. And I think the more people can see that happening in other people around them, that they'll be inspired and intrigued by the idea.
Hmm. What do you do with your family, with your children in that regard, Tracy?
Yeah, that's difficult because...
I imagine.
With my kids, you know, I think had I started them out eating vegan, we'd be there already. But because I hadn't, I think I have dumbed down their palate quite a bit. And so my son has celiac disease, so he's limited in what he can eat. And it is an issue, what he puts into his body. So I'm very careful with him.
Mm-hmm.
I never want him to feel shamed or feel guilty about what he's doing. And for me right now, I just want him to have a healthy outlook on what he eats. My daughter very much wants to be vegetarian, but she really loves chicken nuggets. So every now and then, you know, I've tried to give her the others, and, you know, she doesn't like them. But my daughter will only eat white food, so she'll only eat pasta, bread, sometimes chicken, cake, cookies. But I do remember myself when I was little, like, you do start to grow up, your palate expands.
Yes.
You start to have other ideas. So I do think that they'll get there. They're very compassionate kids. And I'm more excited, I think, to have it come to them on their own. And they're watching me. They're listening to me. So it's getting in. But I'm really positive about it. I never make them feel badly about it. And so I do think when it gets to them, it'll come from a good, healthy place. And it'll
yeah. Right. And tell us about your Thanksgiving celebrations, what you do with your invited guests.
Well, so I get everybody an adopted animal each year from Farm Sanctuary. So when everybody sits down to the table, there's a little book on their plate, and they open it up, and they see who they've gotten that year. And what's nice now is I've been spending so much time at Farm Sanctuary that when we open them up, I know who they've gotten. So I know their personality, I know their name, and I'm able to tell them a little story about them, which I think everybody really appreciates. And my cousin cries every year when she sees who she's gotten. And I think that's like a really nice touch. You know, when I just wrote an article about when veganism collides with the holidays, and it was me writing about how to deal with having people over with different ideas about food. And, you know, I was writing that I needed to have a mantra, which was love and acceptance, love and acceptance. And I showed John it before I posted it, and he said, now remember, you don't just write it, you have to live it. And so I just had to keep saying it over and over again, but it really is helpful when you come at it from a positive way and not a shaming way.
Yeah. Well, isn't it amazing? It seems, Tracy, like it's just been in the last few years that we're learning so much more about how smart animals are and what their behavior means, and it's just fascinating to me. So many different kinds of animals.
Yes. And it's funny that, you know, I don't know what that changed. I guess I keep thinking it has to do with diet and people wanting to be healthier. And so that maybe, like we were saying, that those barriers have come down a little bit. But there's also more credence to people being able to study those things and not
be yes.
thought of as silly.
Right. Yeah. Zach, thanks very much for your call. Cindy in Appleton is next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Hello. I just want to say God bless you for what you're doing. If my ship ever comes in, I'm going to do the same thing you're doing. I'm going to go buy land and save as many animals as I can.
Yay.
And I also love cows, and as much as I just think it's so evil this day and age how they're treated. I mean, I came from a farm. Animals were treated fairly good back in the day, but nowadays with these mega farms and these farmers that have their cows knee-deep in crap all day long, it's just a just sad and pathetic, and I just don't understand it.
And I think people don't understand, don't realize that that's going on to the extent that it is. I think more and more people are going to start to see that and act. I really do.
Hmm. Well, we're still pretty far removed, aren't we? We go to the store, we buy our food. We have no idea what the source is. Literally, a lot of people have no idea where it comes from.
No. I was driving into the city today, and I was stuck in traffic, and I was stuck behind a truck that was for a poultry beef company, and their logo was this cute little cow and a cute little pig smiling, and I just thought it was so ironic that that was their logo, and I knew what was inside the truck, and it wasn't what was on the outside of the truck. And I do think that you know, people are busy, and they don't have the time to think about these things a lot, but I think more and more people are presenting this information. There's a site called The Dodo, thedodo.com, and every day I look at that, and they do a really nice job of balancing hopeful stories with the harder-to-handle stories. And I think when we can figure out a way that people can digest more of this in a way that doesn't shut them down, we'll have greater success.
Well, they can look at you as an example, because it wasn't that long ago that you were shut down by all of this suffering, right? And look at what you're doing now.
Absolutely. And I find it in my life, any time that I've made a decision to go towards something I was afraid of or that I was stopping myself, my life has transformed in a really powerful way, and I've moved on to better things. And it's always been the fear that's kept me from doing it. When I faced that fear, there was something really good on the other side, and it certainly is that case with learning more about animals and learning about the conditions that they're in the modern day.
Tracy Stewart is our guest this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls for her. Her book is Do Unto Animals, A Friendly Guide to How Animals Live and How We Can Make Their Lives Better. She's had a very, very interesting life. Comes from, as she says, kind of a hardscrabble family, and she never really followed what her passions were when she was younger. She did what she was good at, which was art, and she studied design, but she always loved animals. And eventually she went that direction after visiting entirely too many animal shelters and crying too much. John Stewart, who is her husband, urged her to study what she was passionate about, and she became somebody who studied animals and became a veterinary technician. And now she has, you heard, I can't even keep track of all the animals they have now, but she's also, she and John and her family have a farm sanctuary, and it will be fully operational in about a year. And it's a rescue for farm animals that have come from really deplorable situations. So the book is filled with all kinds of information about what animals are like and what they like, including farm animals, cows and horses and sheep and goats and dogs and cats and monarch butterflies and spiders and frogs and rabbits and everything. It's delightful. To have you join us, here's how you do it. You call us at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K. Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Stewart is our guest this hour, and we're going to go back to phone calls in just one moment. I do have to ask you about this, though, because I've kind of stayed away from my dog licking my face, but is it really true that your youthful glow is due to liberal applications of dog saliva?
I like to think that.
Maybe there's something to that, huh?
Well, I have four dogs, so and they all sleep in the bed with us. So I have to think that something positive is coming from that. And people do say that I have a youthful glow, so I'd like to attribute it to that.
All four dogs sleep with you? Tracy, that's a lot.
All four dogs, two children, were completely dysfunctional.
Oh. Let's go to Jocelyn in Sheboygan next. Hi, Jocelyn.
Yes, good afternoon. I really commend you, Tracy, for what you're doing. Unfortunately, I don't feel as optimistic as you do. I did have a story about a dog that my mother had before she died, since he was a puppy. He was a German Shepherd, a pure breed, and she just babied that dog, you know, and he was always by her. And after she died, her husband took the dog, her dog, to the cemetery where she was buried, and he got within 6 feet of her grave, and he just started going crazy. And he wouldn't calm down, so he had to leave. But, you know, I wanted to mention other things, too. You know, 40 years ago, we didn't have factory farms. It just seems to me, you know, I belong to a lot of groups, and nature and animal, and I thought I knew enough, but, boy, you really find out what's going on, and it's just so overwhelming and horrendous. Like in China, they eat dogs and cats, and they make them suffer before that, you know?
Mm-hmm. You want to respond, Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the unfortunate part, is when you start to learn more, it is overwhelming. And so I do think that the thing that I feel hopeful about with creating a sanctuary, and hopefully other sanctuaries continuing to reach out to people, is that sometimes those numbers are overwhelming. If you think that, if you imagine that there are 9 billion animals killed each year for food, that's a number that I don't think many people can get their head around. And that actually can maybe stop you from even wanting to think about it.
Right.
And so I think the thing that's nice about sanctuaries is then you really start to think of those numbers as one and another.
Mm-hmm.
And another. And then I think people can attach themselves to that. And I think for me, I found that when I do get overwhelmed with that information and I do feel like it's hopeless, I really think that if we can all just focus on what is within our grasp and what we can do, that that's going to push back. So even when I'm talking to other people about animals, if I really sense with someone that I'm not going to get anywhere, I stop and I look for someone that I feel like I can get somewhere. You know, John and I went to the doctor the other day, and he went to pull the car around, and I was paying. And the three women behind the desk started to talk to me about the book and seemed actually genuinely curious about how you could put more vegan choices into your meals. And so I started to talk with them, and a half an hour went by. And I completely forgot that John was waiting in the car for me.
Oh.
And so he called the office and asked them to let me go. And I went down in the car, and he said, you know, it's like being married to a Jehovah's Witness, having you. And people will ask me where my wife is. She's knocking on doors. But I do think in that moment, those three women were, I could make a move with them. I could see there could be movement, and I wanted to spend the time with them. And so I think sometimes when we're looking at information and we're thinking of stories, you have to also protect yourself. And you'll be more productive, you'll be happier if you can focus on change that you can make rather than the change that you can't.
And you got to have some humor. That's a great story about him. He's a funny
guy. Oh, I have that with him.
Yeah, he's a funny guy at home, I'm sure. I'm wondering, I have to ask you one question about him, because, you know, there are so many of us who just really miss him on television a whole lot. But it was interesting to me that he wanted you to follow what you were most passionate about, which was animals, and got you to go into veterinary technician work. Do you do that for him as well? Is there something that he's really passionate about that you want him to move into and he's thinking about?
Oh, you're making me feel so guilty.
Oh, no, I am?
Yes, because
I'm sorry.
He really wants to play the drums.
He does?
He does, and I you know, and he is. And I don't know if you've ever experienced someone learning to play the drums.
Oh, yes, I have.
So it's been a little difficult for me to be completely supportive. It was his birthday the other day, and I got him a T-shirt that when you're standing far away from it, it says, I love my wife. But when you get closer in, it says, I love my wife when she lets me play drums.
That's great. I think the two of you are absolutely perfectly matched, Tracy, from our short conversation. You found greatness in each other.
Whoa.
All right. Well, yeah, I understand. But you've got a lot of property now, so you could play in the woods. Right?
Exactly. I'm
okay.
Going to send him out to the woods.
Yeah, there. Let's go to Dennis next in Wachoma. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you, Kathleen?
Fine, how are you?
Wonderful. I was really enjoying your guest. We started out, I'm in a long-term 27-year relationship with my partner, We just were able to get married with Illinois legalized gay marriage four years ago.
Congratulations.
But, we started out, when we bought our first home, we got our first Doberman. He got cancer. We fought an incredible battle trying to save his life, and we got him a companion dog in the meantime. And, of course, fighting cancer in people isn't easy, and it wasn't to be the case in his case. But we went on. When he did pass on, we replaced him with another very cherished dog who also became ill and got wobblers. Hmm. But as the years went along, we just kept adding dogs. The next thing you knew, we were two Dobermans and a Minpin named Larry, by the way, which tickles everybody. And then we added another Doberman. And then just recently in the last year, my sister was diagnosed with having had her cancer return. And her greatest fear wasn't that she was going to pass on, but that what was going to happen to her three pugs and her cat.
Oh.
And we promised her we'd give them a home.
Oh, Dennis.
And our oldest Doberman had just passed on, and we had replaced her with two little tiny Minpins. Oh. So we now find ourselves with two huge Doberman, three middle-sized pugs, and three very small Minpins. And along the through the years, as we moved along, we also added five cats.
Oh, Dennis.
I love you.
Now, needless to say, we don't live in the city.
No.
Nobody would allow us that many animals. But I, at nighttime, Jay, my partner, sleeps with the cats, and I sleep with most of the dogs. I have all the Dobermans and the Minpins sleeping with me, and then the pugs are in the room next door. We give them their own bedroom. But they eventually want to get
alone. I'm not alone.
No, you're not, Tracy.
But I have to I have to say that whole idea about the facial is true.
Is it? Oh, great. We're all going to try that now. This is our new information. All right, we have dogs.
It's been confirmed.
There we go. Dogs alive on the face. Dennis, thank you. Sounds like you have a happy life. Cheryl and Neshota. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm a foster home, long term, over 100 dogs.
Ooh.
At least we've fostered. There's a desperate need for foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you can do one dog at a time. Transport, if you can't take a foster, there's transports that need people to help move dogs and cats to areas where they have a better chance of being adopted. People say, well, I can't see how I could foster. I wouldn't be able to give them up. When you see the homes these dogs go to, you'd like to go with them.
Yeah, you've fostered a lot of animals, Tracy.
Yeah, we have. And I think, you know, the thing is that you do sometimes not do it because you're afraid of that once they've seen the good life, you'll never be able to take them back to the shelter. But what I find is that because we have them out in the world, and they're actually, you know, a lot of animals that are in shelters for too long start to exhibit stress behaviors. And so, unfortunately, when someone does come in, they're not seeing them in their best light. And then they end up getting overlooked and staying there longer. So what we've done, especially now that we don't live in the city, is that we'll take a lot of the guys that have been in there for a long time and let them run in the backyard and let them play and take them around town. And then that way we're introducing them to a much wider audience. So when we have fostered, we've actually never had to take the dog back to the shelter. We've always ended up, you know, finding someone that we know or we like to give them a great home. And it's true, like, they end up going to great places.
Mm. Thank you so much, Cheryl. Deb, last caller, almost out of time, in Madison. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I am wondering which are the best charities to give as far as animal support. Currently, I give to about 35, but I want to make
35?
Sure that they're... Yeah, and I want to make sure that they really go to appropriate places.
Woo.
Wow, I know. That is hard. You know, I did find when I was researching the book that I wanted to make sure that I was going, you know, I wanted to be able to donate the proceeds of the book to somebody that I felt like was going to do really good things. And so I did choose Farm Sanctuary, and I actually just joined their board, and I actually can see that they're a really great organization and that the money really does go towards helping animals, to legislation, to advocacy. Another group that I really love is the Animal League Defense Fund, which is made up of lawyers, and they do a lot of hard work to get legislation passed around this country. So I think they're a great one. And then I always say to get close to your local animal shelter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really great to have a relationship with your local shelter, because that's something that you can access more readily. You'll go there more often if you're nearby.
Yeah, and on that note, we have to say goodbye. Thank you, Deb, so much. Tracy, you're a total delight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, I was afraid no one was going to call.
Oh, no, we had tons of calls, Tracy. Don't you worry. Come on back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tracy Stewart. The book is Do Unto Animals, A Friendly Guide to How Animals Live and How We Can Make Their Lives Better. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the show and Chris Molina for on-air production. Thanks for listening.